Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Sudarshan Chemicals Q4 FY25 post-results earnings conference call hosted by Axis Capital Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand over the conference call to Mr. Ankur Periwal from Axis Capital Limited. Thank you, and over to you, Mr. Periwal.
Thanks, Neerav. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Sudarshan Chemical Industries Limited Q4 and 12-month FY25 conference call. We are pleased to host the management for the discussion post-Hubeck merger here. As usual, the call will start with a brief management discussion on earnings performance, followed by an interactive Q&A session. Sudarshan Chemical Industries Limited's management will be represented by Mr. Rajesh Rathi, Managing Director, Mr. Neelkanth Nathu, Chief Financial Officer, and Mr. Amey Athle, General Manager, Finance. Over to you, Rathi, for your initial remarks.
Thank you. Thank you, Axis Capital and Ankur Periwal, for hosting our earnings call. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Sudarshan's Q4 FY25 earnings conference call. Our investor presentation has been uploaded on the stock exchanges for your ready reference. During the call, we could make forward-looking statements. These statements consider the environment we see as of today and carry risk and uncertainties that could cause our actual results to differ from those expressed in today's call. We do not undertake to update any forward-looking statements made on this call. Now, I will request Mr. Rajesh Rathi to give his opening remarks. Good morning, everyone, and I hope you can hear me clearly. Thank you, Axis and Ankur, for hosting our conference call. It's a great pleasure to be here on the desk. So I would like to give you a little bit of history on our acquired group, Heubach. After World War II, one of the largest chemical companies which existed in the world was IG Farben, right? IG Farben was split up after the World War II in three companies: BASF, Bayer, and Hoechst. And Heubach, the acquired group, belongs to the legacy of Hoechst, right? Hoechst was a 30 billion euro chemical company. In years to come later, it spun off its specialty chemical business into Clariant, which in 2022, SK Capital and Heubach bought this pigment business, and it was called as Heubach. So going forward, I would say I would refer to three legacies. One is the Clariant legacy, Heubach legacy, and Sudarshan legacy, right? Clariant came with a great history of pigments. Many pigments were invented there. So for us, this acquisition is not only about a strategic and financial fit, but it's also preserving history. And we have deep-rooted technical technology with us. With this, and as you all know, Sudarshan legacy was the fastest-growing, most profitable company globally for pigments, with 75 years of experience, entrepreneurial and agile culture. Together, both these companies together, the new one Sudarshan, we feel that we could become the most value-creating pigment company with customer centricity and agility. So the company has together now as one Sudarshan. We have 19 manufacturing facilities in 11 countries across five continents. We represent all major industry segments. We have 4,000-plus global customers, and a very large range of products, right? Our combined turnover is about 1 billion together, and it's a very exciting opportunity for us.
Sir, sorry to interrupt you. We are losing your audio. It's breaking a little bit.
Okay. IT. Is this better, sir?
Yes, sir. You can go deal, yeah.
Okay. Let me know if, otherwise we'll change the laptop. I think there's been some technical glitch where we are not able to log on to the conference hall. But do let us know if there's a problem, right? This is a global manufacturing footprint of the 19 manufacturing facilities. Yes, please. If you see our product range, we have one of the widest product range now in the industry, right? Organic pigments, a very wide range of high-performance pigments to classical pigments, right? Both Sudarshan Legacy Legacy Clarion have a very, very strong now footprint put together in organic pigments. But if you see what the value addition and legacy solution also become brings the effect pigments portfolio. But if you see the portfolio in terms of inorganic pigments, corrosion protection, pigment dispersion and dyes, this is, these are the areas where, solution had a big weakness, or I would say, a weak portfolio, and this has really strengthened our product portfolio. Some of the specialty dyes find very exciting applications like your phones selling into, we have several colors approved in iPhone, Samsung, etc. And so the aluminum dyes is a very interesting business given this addition. Some of our pigment dispersions find applications in personal care, seed coating markets. Again, a very good presence which comes along with us, right? The corrosion protection pigments find very good application in automotive on the base coat, which we get. So all in all, I would say a very exciting portfolio which we bring to the table. Altogether, we have about 200 to 250 people in the technology roles, and we are looking to further strengthen this. Right. So, I think some reflections from our integration process, right? All in all, I think there have been very good, pleasant surprises. I wouldn't say, on a net basis, I would say. So I think, some of our areas, as I said, this was a combination already of two legacies, Clarion and Heubach, but both the companies had very limited integration of data, systems, culture, processes. And so we have really launched a building one culture, integrating our SAP systems, right? Today we probably operate on four different SAP systems, right? We want to integrate this into one. We want to build a culture, one culture. And I'm glad to tell you, in a short span, more than 70% of the employees have been covered for our purpose, mission, values going forward. We have also launched a large cost reduction program where we find we are able to create a substantial value creation funnel. So all in all, I would say we started the integration on the right space. The second area which we found, there was the customer centricity was lost. So for example, there was no customer service in several geographies, right? This was all in the back end. Giving you a very stark example, if a customer wants to find out where the material is, they would have to send an email. They would get a code. They would have to log on to the code after 24 hours and try and find out, if they're lucky, where their material is, right? We believe customer service is a very important priority. And we are kind of bringing customer service back, right? So what we mean is in each geography location, we would have customer service who customers can reach out, who are proactive, reaching out to customers, and they're present in the local languages, right? So in Europe, you know, Spanish, Italian, German would be common languages which we would kind of equip with, right? That's one area. And as a consequence of this, what would happen is a lot of the salespeople are spending time on doing customer service and supply chain jobs instead of focusing on building the business, developing the business. None of the senior management was in touch with the customers. Thus, it was just not, you know, if you are not in touch with the customers, how do you build trust and reliability? And also, you know, it's the customer pulse which you need to understand and drive internal initiatives to kind of meet the customer requirements. That was missing. I'm glad to tell you that my entire team is very, very on the market, on the ground. In fact, I have met more than 100 customers personally and, you know, to discuss how we can build this trust and reliability back, right? On there was no one face to the customer, right? So there were several salespeople would kind of call on to the same customer. We have created one person contact at the customer, and we've already launched that within the 10 days of acquisition. One more important part which we've done is we've built the technical competence back, right? I think customers valued the technical collaboration. So we built the technical marketing function. We built the R&D function back. We've rehired several people. We've not just rehired them, but brought in a lot of focus for them and a lot of importance. We feel that they are the backbone of our organization. And this is also leading to a lot of good confidence with customers. During the insolvency, of course, supply chain processes were broken. We need to rebuild these supply chain processes back. But one decision we've taken is though we may be inefficient till we build back our supply chain processes, we have upped our safety stock so that the customer service, the delivery performance to the customers doesn't suffer. There were critical gaps. As I mentioned, the technical workforce was already kind of put in place, but still we had several gaps, particularly in the support functions, HR, IT, finance, and we've made good progress by hiring senior resources in supply chain, procurement, finance, and HR already. Just deep diving. As I mentioned, cost reduction is going to be a very, very important phenomenon for us going forward. And we are together working across the organization. So we are not just focused on, we are just not focused on one area, but we are looking at building right from operations, supply chain, looking at what are the cost savings initiative. We are looking best practices across manufacturing sites. You know, we make several products across sites. Where do I get my best yield? What are my best manufacturing facilities and how can I replicate on these other sites? Procurement, I think we are looking at how we can leave Asia-led procurement more and negotiate better contracts. IT, we are fast-tracking. There were several initiatives which we had done already to reduce IT costs. We'll continue to do that, but more importantly, we are getting the we have already started working on the one SAP, right? There are other SG&A costs we are working on. The R&D or the product management is really focusing on building portfolio optimization, removing inefficiencies, and looking at few strategic backward integration projects. We're looking at how we can win back some businesses which were lost. And finally, we would come back to some net working capital. We do have some room in the future to release some working capital. Some of the core principles which we are driving the business, and I think it's very important to understand that even before the business went into insolvency, the business was on the block from Clarient for some time. Thus, the business has been defocused now, I would say, for several years, right? So the culture of, you know, culture in the organization was, you know, survival from day to day, right? Look at cash flows, look at what, you know, don't think long term. And we are saying that we want to build a mindset. What we are saying is, you know, move the mindset from playing to survive to playing to win. We are saying be bold, be passionate and ambitious. We would love to dream big, but stay humble with all your stakeholders where you can listen to them and continuously improve. I already spoke a lot on customer centricity, and this is going to be a building block for us. Building ownership and agility as we've put in our organization structure. The very design of our organization structure has been to build entrepreneurship and agility in the organization. And I'm already seeing good results where people are willing to make quick decisions, which in erstwhile would have taken years, right? Simplicity, this is a very important part. As I mentioned, the inheritance of, or, you know, the legacy comes from Hex, which was a large multi-billion euro chemical company. Today, we are a pigment company, right? And with the processes which we follow in some of the legacy companies, especially, are still inherited from Hex. And that's why we are saying that we need to make them more relevant of for the business today and make the simples, very simple. Financial stability is going forward is very important. We are very, very prudently managing cash. We are being very conservative. We want to ensure that, cash is king, and we are going to keep conserving cash as we going forward and being very conservative from that perspective. My team and I are very, very excited about this opportunity. This opportunity to build on our legacies, merge as one of the most valuable pigment companies. Customer centricity, building customer centricity, building the trust and reliability with our customers. You know, we could become a world-leading color solution provider. There's a great platform and opportunity given our technical competence, our comprehensive product portfolio, and a global manufacturing footprint. And we are again looking forward to truly acting as one global team. We'll talk now more on the numbers. And there are several numbers which we are going to present. So I would request your attention going forward. Close attention going forward. So some of the reflections from the market environment. The market is not easy. I mean, that's no secret. Everyone knows, given the geopolitical and the tariff situation, it remains uncertain. There's a flat demand, and there is also destocking which is happening, right? But on the positive note, as I mentioned, we've had several customer conversations, and it has become very clear that customers want to partner with us. They want us to become a reliable long-term supplier. And this is a very positive, and this is somewhere we are using these areas to kind of build our business, right? Apologies that our audit took longer than it was expected, and we could not meet with the timelines, but I think Natuji will explain some of the areas where we had a few concerns going forward. Yeah, Natuji? Thank you, Mr. Rathi. As Mr. Rathi has mentioned, we have completed the audit for the financial year 25, including the acquired group. However, this annual audit took longer than expected. Couple of reasons. This particular acquired group was not audited at the consolidated level since the calendar year 2022. It has 48 acquired group entities under the reporting coverage, with three different ERP systems in the acquired group, and that is also not integrated, created some kind of data challenge for us to extract as far as the audit is concerned. And the last is the acquired group was not used to the rigor of the statutory audit of the listed company. And since it was not audited for the past 2 years, it took a lot of effort. Our team has put in tremendous efforts to complete the audit, and we feel happy that team has delivered this humongous task. Thank you. On the transaction details, as we have mentioned, just to have a recap, this is a transaction which has asset purchase agreement and a share purchase agreement. The preliminary purchase price paid as per the APA and SPA is at 151.9 million euro. As against this purchase price, the assets which were taken over on the deal closing, the significant ones are the tangible and the ROU assets for the various manufacturing plants taken over are at Euro 181 million. The net working capital which we have acquired from the acquired group is Euro 190 million, which is inventory, trade receivable and trade payables. And apart from that, we have also got cash and cash equivalent as well as investment in mutual fund to the extent of Euro 68 million. So this is overall, the comparison of the purchase price paid and the assets which we have taken over on the closing. Now next couple of slides are very busy with the numbers, and I would like to take you through this slide. The first slide is on the One Sudarshan Quarter 4 Financial Year 25 performance. And this slide has three parts. One is a legacy Sudarshan. When I say legacy Sudarshan, it is a legacy Sudarshan pigment business plus a RICO. And then we have an acquired group to present the One Sudarshan as the performance parameters. The sales for the quarter, as far as the legacy Sudarshan is concerned, is at 825 crore, which shows 8% growth over the last year Q4 number of 764 crore. While Sudarshan Pigment Legacy has delivered the robust sales growth, which we can see in the subsequent slides at the rate of 16%, somewhat subdued performance of the RICO has pulled down the overall percentage of the legacy Sudarshan. The gross margin shows good improvement from 42.9% to 44.2%, which is 1.3% up, which has been reflected in the adjusted EBITDA for the quarter, which is at 126 crore compared to 119 crore. And in terms of the percentage, it is at 15.2% compared to 15.6%. For the acquired group, for the month of March, the sales stands at 525 crore, with the gross margin of around 55.8% and the first month EBITDA is at 22 crores. With this, One Sudarshan performance for the quarter on the sales side is 1,349 crores as compared to 764 crores last year. And the adjusted EBITDA is at 148 crore compared to 119 crore of the last year Q4.
You want to mention about the one-off?
Yeah. When we say the adjusted EBITDA, this adjusted EBITDA is for the employee cost of rupees 12 crore, which is relating to the acquisition. And there are one-off expenses of rupees 8 crore, including earlier period MIDC CETT settlement, which we expect that this will be one-time cost. Thanks. Now coming back to One Sudarshan financial year 25 performance, again this is a legacy Sudarshan, which is the Sudarshan Pigment plus Rico and the acquired group. On the full year basis, the legacy Sudarshan sales stood at 2,821 crore compared to 2,300 crore last year, showing growth of 11%. The gross margin shows good improvement, which is at 45.3% compared to 44.2% last year, which is 1.2% up. And the adjusted EBITDA for the Sudarshan Legacy Group is at 380 crore compared to 316 crore last year, and the EBITDA percentage is at 13.5%. Acquired group we have covered in the last slide. Since this is only for the month, the number remains same. And when we see that total Sudarshan, One Sudarshan on a consolidated basis for the financial year, the sales are at 3,346 crore compared to 2,539 crore last year, and gross margin is at 47% compared to 44.2%, majorly also because of the acquired group gross margin, which is at 56%. EBITDA adjusted is at 402 crore compared to 316 crore. Coming to the pigment performance, now this is the performance for the Sudarshan Legacy Pigment plus acquired group pigment business. For the quarter four, the Sudarshan Legacy Pigment has delivered the sales growth of around 16%. The sales stands at 744 crore compared to 644 crore last year, and with good with the gross margin at 44.7% compared to 44% of last year. And adjusted EBITDA for the quarter is at 121 crore compared to 100 crore last year with 16.3% EBITDA margin. And the pigment global business for the quarter, the sales stood at 1,269 crore compared to 644 crore last year, and with the EBITDA 143 crore in acquired group compared to last year 100 crore for the quarter four. This is a performance for the full year 2025 pigment business. So for the year, pigment business sales growth is at around 17%, 2,595 crore sales compared to 2023. Gross margin shows good improvement of 1.9% reflected in the EBITDA margin of 15.2% for the year with EBITDA adjusted EBITDA of 396 crore. And for the consolidated pigment global, the revenue stood at 3,119 crore compared to 2,223, and EBITDA adjusted for the pigment global is 418 crore compared to 300 crore last year. Coming to the Rico performance, Rico performance during the year was subdued, while revenue dropped by 28%, which is at 228 crore, and also reduction seen in the gross margin, putting entire year EBITDA number under negative. The revenue was impacted due to the lower carry forward of the order from the FY24 and lower order booking of H1 in the last financial year,
Gross margin has also been impacted due to the cost overruns which we had seen for the projects which were executed during the last year against the orders booked in the FY 2024. We are rebuilding the organization for this business with experienced team in the project business with right skill and experience in the project execution, which will help us in streamlining the operation, building strategic sourcing capabilities, and working on the reduction in the overhead. We have seen marginal improvement in the quarter four performance due to the stringent control over fixed cost and project execution with detailed process review put in place for the project cost. We have seen during the year opening order book for the current year. The opening order book balance is double as compared to the last year, and with good visibility of order booking in the near future, we remain confident that RECO business will turn around during this year. A couple of key financial ratios. Earnings per share is at 22.5 compared to 16. ROCE is at 10.3 versus 11.7. But just to keep you posted, this is the one Sudarshan ROCE with the acquisition assets and the capital employed being considered. Net debt to equity is at 0.3. Net debt level at the year end is at around 650 crore, and net working capital as a percentage of sales is at 25%. I will hand it over to Mr. Rathi for the outlook and the priorities ahead. Thank you, Nathuji. Sorry, technical glitch. We have to keep shifting our chairs. How we look at the acquired group, I think we are very confident of the turnaround, as I had mentioned even earlier. And this financial year, looking at some of the cost synergies which we are building up, the cost reduction initiatives, and we are very confident that we should be able to deliver a EBITDA of 35 million this year. And in the next 3 to 4 years, we should be able to deliver EBITDA of 90 to 100 million in the acquired group. From this perspective, I think we are on a good path going forward. This is all given that there are no untoward or force majeure situation. We feel that we can kind of confidently turn this around. Yeah. Some of our key priorities is we're double downing on winning back some business. We are continuing to focus on cost and value capture. And till we get the one SAP up, how do we build in the interim MIS and also accelerate our one SAP roadmap? These are some of our key priorities going forward. Thank you. Thank you so much for carefully listening to us. And as Nathuji, I don't know if you mentioned, but we planned this VC as there were a lot of numbers which we wanted to share. And this is the first time. Probably we could go back to the normal audio presentations from the next conference. But I hope this you all have found this useful. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may click on the raise hand icon to ask your questions. Kindly accept the prompt and join this panelist. Unmute your audio and announce your company name before proceeding your question. You may also write your questions in the Zoom chat option in the bottom of your screen.
Nirav, till the time we get the queue, maybe there are some questions on the chat box. Should we take them accordingly?
Yes, sir. Sure, sir.
Sure. So, Rajeev, I'll probably take up some questions from the chat box, and you can address them accordingly.
Your voice is equal. Can you be slightly loud?
Sorry, is it better now?
Yes, much better.
Sure. So, some questions from the chat box, so I'll take them up, accordingly. The first question from the chat box, total addressable market and the market growth approximately.
The organic pigment market is about $5 billion US dollars with a growth rate of about 3%.
Sure. I hope that addresses the question. Taking the next one, exceptional cost for FY25 stood at 104 crores. We believe these were largely related to Hauberg acquisition. Could you provide a ballpark estimate of the integration related costs expected in FY26 and FY27? Natuji, I was audible.
So the management is on mute. Sir, can you please unmute your line and proceed with your question?
Yeah, just one second, please. FY25-26, we expect about €10 million integration costs. For the year ahead, we still not plan for it.
Sure, sir. Thank you. There's another question from Abhay Jain, Hillview Global. My question is, are you looking at cost cutting, which is optimizing cost and facilities as of now?
I think from a manufacturing footprint, we don't plan to optimize any manufacturing or close any facility. The right sizing of the Frankfurt site has already been done even before the acquisition, which the administrator had initiated. From a perspective of cost reduction, we have a huge cost reduction drive, which I explained in my presentation.
Sure. Nirav, probably you can take some questions from the raise hand options here now.
Thank you. We take the first question from the line of Rajesh Kothari. Kindly accept the prompt. Join us, panelists. Unmute your audio. Kindly provide your company name and then proceed with your question.
Hi, thanks for this opportunity. I hope I'm audible.
Yes, sir.
Sir, I have two questions. Recently,
sir, sorry to interrupt you. Could you please introduce your company name and then proceed with your question?
Sure. Rajesh Kothari, founder and CIO of RFI Credit Advisors. We are large shareholder of your company. I have two questions. So first of all, congratulations for this great asset what you acquired. And I'm sure you've done it around over the next 3 to 5 years to your company's profitability. So I have two questions. My first question is, recently when I look at DIC results, which is also the largest player in this industry, they also reported 5% EBITDA margins. And if I go by their press release, it is equivalent to 2021. So almost 5 years back, that margin they have achieved, and they are back to that. And when you reported a strong 4.5% margin, although it is only for 26-27 days, so without much benefit of cost optimization program. So my question is, what is leading to the improvement in EBITDA margins for the global industry, despite the challenges of tariff and restocking by customers? So that is my first question. Should I also put slide number 7 question, or should I, how the flow should be on? I can ask once you answer that question, whatever you are comfortable.
No, you can go with your second question too.
My second question is with reference to, you know, RICO in particular. It would be great if you can give a little bit more details about what led to the, you know, revenue decline. Is it a loss of customer? Is it loss of market share? And what will lead to, you know, getting back to that revenue and that market share? And also the EBITDA margins in particular, because, you know, your gross margins are already healthy despite, you know, declining revenue. So is it a volume growth versus value growth? How we should rate that? And the key steps what you are going to take to come back to profitability? Because, you know, after 2-3 years now, Sudarshan's tenure is doing very well. Hubei is also hopefully will improve. But all of a sudden, we saw the new puncture from the RICO perspective. So, you know, can you give some little bit more color on that? That would be useful. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. So let me, I'll address the, your question on the pigment, performance of, this. And I request Nathuji, if you can add in the RICO, if you can take the RICO question. I do not want to comment on our competitors' performance, but I think, if you look at the, if you look at our industry, I think average, historical average has been, you know, a, you know, EBITDA margin between, let's say, 8%-11%, right? And, we've, you know, with our cost, with our integration as One Sudarshan and the cost synergies, and the focus on technology and technical people, right? Building strong relationship with customers, you know, some of the fundamentals which we are kind of getting. We are very confident about the projections which we have given on the acquired group. And Sudarshan's business, of course, would run on a business as usual, the legacy Sudarshan business. Yeah.
So basically, you know, from the global market perspective, sorry, I didn't get an answer on that. My question was, how do you see the global industry? Because there is improvement in profitability, right? Like, we have also had only for 22 days, but all of a sudden, you know, the company reported 4.5% margin. So what has led to the improvement in margin? My question is that, sir.
The cost reduction efforts which we have been making, we already started planning some of the cost reduction efforts after the definitive agreements. And with the administrator, we've been supporting him on stuff. And these are some of the areas of margins we have seen, right? The global situation is, when I say the global situation is difficult, we are not getting natural tailwinds that we could kind of grow our business from that perspective, and that's the concern area, right? So that's where I think the EBITDA margins you are able to see, and we should be able to, going forward, we should be able to improve even in this financial year our EBITDA margins.
And this assumes what revenue for Quebec?
So, you know, it's just been 3 months, and I don't want to kind of overly emphasize, but I think we should, on a question, you know, on a rough basis, I think we should assume that the current run rate is at 650. We should kind of get to at least 700 by the year end.
Okay. Thank you for answering this question.
Thank you very much.
Answering the question, Mr. Rajesh, on the RICO bill, correct? So, as I mentioned in my opening remark, we have started the transformation project for the RICO business, and RICO business has been going through, you know, positives and negatives in the past couple of years. Couple of levers where we as a management are working is rebuilding the RICO organization with the right mindset and the leadership which knows the project business. And we have, you know, happy to state that we have completed this exercise. Along with that, the key is how to drive the project execution and how to build the capability for seamless execution of the large projects, which we had seen in the past. We were having some challenge in terms of the large project execution. With the right set of team which is being there, we feel confident that this team will be able to deliver better performance and better project execution going forward. Simultaneously, we are also working on reduction in the overall overhead so that the fixed cost control is one of the critical levers which we have started working on in the RECO. And we strongly believe that you will see the results of those initiatives or all these initiatives in the coming quarters in FY26. Thank you.
What steady state margin we should achieve at RECO level?
So, currently we are at a very lower end of the EBITDA percentage. We expect that this particular business should deliver somewhere between 7 to 8% as a range to start with. And our endeavor is to take this forward to the lower double digit number in the years to come.
Great. Thank you, sir. Wish you all the best. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. A request to all the participants. Kindly restrict to 2 questions per participant and join the queue again for a follow-up question. Next question is from the line of Manoj Baheti. Kindly accept the prompt, join as panelist, unmute your audio, introduce your company name, and proceed with your question. Go ahead, sir.
Hello, am I audible?
Yes, sir.
Hi, this is Manoj Baheti. I am from Carnelian Capital. Rajeshji, first of all, thank you so much for giving such a detailed presentation and also congratulations on a successful integration and getting the audited financials done. So I have 2-3 questions. I will just put those questions together. So first one is, I wanted to get some color on that, how do you see the cost competitiveness of your operations in Europe vis-a-vis manufacturing in emerging countries? Because I think the way the earlier owner under Reebok ownership has landed into financial trouble. One may be related to their internal inefficiencies or higher cost thing, but was it something related to that operations in Europe are not that competitive vis-a-vis operations in India and China? So your initial reading on that. Secondly, how do you see the incremental capital allocation for the business as a whole? Would you be required to put some additional capital after assessing their existing infrastructure, manufacturing facility? And my third question is, if you can elaborate a bit on that, what will drive the EBITDA margin expansion of your European operations, considering the tariff threat which is there right now? So these 3 questions I do have. Thank you. Was that audible?
Yes, sir, you're audible. Management, may I request to unmute and proceed with the question and with the answer?
Yes.
So your first question regarding Europe, of course, there's no denial that the cost in manufacturing in Europe is higher. And that's the reason our strategy has been to make only specialty products. And that's where we've right-sized our operations in Europe to make specialty products. We do feel that that's a place to make specialty products, and it has inherent advantages of building reliability and trust with customers, and you get a better value. And that's where you see the gross margins are, we plan for higher gross margins, right, compared to the legacy solution. And however, the fixed costs and other costs are going to be heavy, and that's where I think it pulls down the EBITDA margin. Right, we do have a good
plan to ensure that the Europe business, German becomes part of our global integrated facility with this new manufacturing footprint. Your question on the tariffs, I think, of course, tariffs situation is very uncertain. However, given our global manufacturing footprint, it gives us the most flexibility now to respond favorably to our customers, right? So we have options to deliver from Europe, Mexico, Brazil, India, right? So that's the flexibility we bring in now with our manufacturing global footprint. If you see legacy Sudarshan, I think, if you look at from that perspective, we would be able to supply only from India, given that. So that's the new context for us.
Sure.
And my question on incremental capital allocation and EBITDA margins are.
So I think, given the currently we don't see any addition. So from a volume perspective, we have enough capacity for our growth for the next 4 to 5 years. We don't need any capex. The plants were fairly well maintained. So whatever normal maintenance capex is required, that's what will be required going forward. So I would say, to sum up, no major planned capex. There may be a few strategic projects which we may want to backward integrate, etc. Those will be minor capex.
Sure. And last one on the what will drive uptick in EBITDA margins going forward, other than the cost initiatives and the integration initiative which you have already taken?
Sorry, come again, please.
My last question was on the EBITDA margin uptick. What will be the drivers other than the cost initiatives which we have taken?
I think there are, there are 2-3 drivers. One is the cost reduction initiatives, which will go on for the next 18 months, right? It's not, they'll continue for 18 months. The second initiative is we are trying to win back businesses, right, which we've lost in some time. So these will be the drivers. These will be the two drivers going forward to build the EBITDA.
Yeah. Thanks for taking my questions and wish you good luck.
Thank you very much. We take our next question from the line of Nitesh Dhoot from Anand Rathi. Kindly join us, panelists, unmute your audio and video and proceed with your question.
Hello. Am I audible?
Yes.
Hi, team. Good afternoon. And congratulations on the successful integration. So my first question is, on the change in product mix as part of the integration, something that you highlighted earlier, more of specialty in UBAC and, non-specialty more towards Sudarshan. So how do we see, Sudarshan's margin trajectory going forward, the legacy business that is?
I think legacy Sudarshan also had a very good specialty portfolio. So I didn't say that. I think the question is that, and as per our projections we've given, I think the legacy Sudarshan business will be business as usual, will keep growing at 10 to 11% going forward. And the major part and the other part of EBITDA growth will come from the acquired entity.
So you mean to say there will be no shift of of products, between the entities, some of the specialty products moving to UVAC from the legacy business, that is not going to happen. I'm sorry, I recollect from one of the previous discussions, that there was supposed to be some shift where, you know, you would have gotten more commodity products into India and shifting some of the specialties to Europe.
Yeah. So the I think what you're referring to is transfer of some of the commodity Frankfurt products which have happened to the legacy Vyborg India business already, right? And that's
okay.
That's completed.
All right. Okay. Sure. And so next question is on the depreciation, you know, for UBAG, which annualizes to almost about 270 crores, you know, for the, 270 crores. So what will be the depreciation numbers, you know, for the acquired entities, I mean, the run rate? And how much is the gross block for the acquired entities? Net block, as I understand, is somewhere closer to 1,200 crores. What is the gross block there?
So, Nitesh, for the acquired group, the depreciation run rate on a yearly basis will be in the range of Euro 23 to 24 million for the year.
All right. And the gross block, sir?
No, sir. So, Nitesh, as we had presented, the value of the tangible asset is Euro 181 million.
Okay, all right. So just one last question on the working capital. I think with the numbers given out, you know, if you just do some working, it's coming out closer to 85 days. You can correct me if I'm wrong for UBAC. And, you know, so, and, you know, will we need additional working capital there, you know, especially on account of, you know, market receivables, which appears to be limited at just about 27 days. You know, I mean, basis the working that I did. So, you know, how much will the receivables, you know, be in terms of number of days going forward? Will there be an increase there?
The working capital increase would come from increase in inventory, right? As I mentioned in my presentation, some of our planning processes are broken, which will take some time to fix. But we don't want the customers to kind of face issues in supplies, and that's where I think we are, you know, we expect that inventories would increase as going forward right now. From accounts receivable and payables, I think they would offset each other. As we keep getting more payables, our receivables also would increase.
All right, great. Great, sir. Thank you so much. I'll come back in the queue.
Thank you.
Thank you. I request to all the participants, kindly restrict to 2 questions per participant. I join the queue again for a follow-up. Next question is from the line of Madhav Marda. Kindly join us, panelist. Unmute your audio and proceed with your question. Also, kindly introduce your company name.
Yeah, hi. Am I audible?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
So thank you so much for your time. Just wanted to understand a bit, you know, below the EBITDA line. Mainly of the deleveraging. If you could just help us understand how much annual free cash flow generation, in your view, the overall Sudarshan business can generate in fiscal year 26 and 27. If you could give us some broad sense, so just to get the path for deleveraging, that's my first question.
Hi, Madhav, Nilkant here. So, as we have seen, the net debt at around 650 plus level. Going forward, with the visibility on the free cash flow over the next 3 to 4 year period, we expect that we should, you know, deleverage and come to a zero debt level.
So, how many years do you think it takes to hit zero debt, given combined business? Like, it takes 3 years in your view to get to zero debt position?
We expect between 3 to 4 years.
Three to 4 years. Okay.
Yeah.
And then just one another basic question was for the underlying Sudarshan pigment business, excluding UBAC, what was the underlying margin in that business? Like the sort of business that we had before Hubac and adjusted for the Hubac Geco operations. How is that business doing today, the underlying margins?
So Madhav, we have presented, you know, the legacy Sudarshan pigment business.
Okay.
So, you know, for the quarter under consideration, our pigment business delivered 16.3%
EBITDA. Ah, okay. Got it. Got it.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, that's perfect. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Dhruv Mochhala from HDFC Mutual Fund. Kindly join us, panelist. Unmute your audio and proceed with your question.
Hello.
Right, so you're audible.
Yeah, thank you so much. So thank you for the chance. So first thing on the cash payment that we have done for the acquisition. So you have to pay 151 million, and from the cash flows, I see you have currently paid about 800-900 crores for the acquisition. So is there some pending payment remaining for the acquisition which probably comes now?
Dhruv, can you please repeat your question?
So the acquisition price is about 151 million, which is probably about 1400-1500 crores. And from the cash flow statement, I see you have currently paid about 850 odd crores, 850 or probably 900 odd crores. So is there some remaining payment for the acquisition?
So Dhruv, there is no remaining payment which is required to be paid for this 151 million.
Okay, everything is done. As of Q4, everything is done.
Yeah, as of Q4, €151 million has been paid.
Okay, okay. And so the other thing was, there is a good amount of working capital which has come along with the acquisition. So this is all mark-to-marketed. I mean, there is no significant, you know, write-offs, or once you evaluate it better, you will understand. So there are some, say for example, inventory high, there is some unmonetizable inventory. So everything is mark-to-marketed.
Yes, Dhruv, your understanding is correct. All these are fair value.
Got it. And sir, last thing is, when the equation was done earlier, you had mentioned about, if I'm not wrong, 800 to 1,000 crores of further investment in working capital and capital refurbishment and all those that will be required over a period of time. So does that estimate still hold? And if yes, over what period of time do you think that investment will happen? That cash flow or investment will happen?
A normal maintenance budget of 15 to 20 million that will be required. We are, you know, from a perspective of working capital, there may be slight, you know, probably 8 to 10 million euros which we are investing. I don't think we will require above that.
Okay, perfect. Perfect. That's helpful. Perfect, sir. Thank you so much. That's all. And all the best.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Rikin Shah. Kindly join us, panelist. Unmute your audio. Introduce your company name and proceed with the question, please.
Hi, am I audible?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
So, hi, I'm Rikin from the Boring AMC. So, I wanted to ask firstly on the product overlap. So, sir, is there any sort of product overlap between the two companies, and, you know, what's the degree of the overlap? And so, my second question is, for the entities where we have not done an asset purchase deal, so is there any sort of contingent liabilities that we have taken on?
From a product overlap, there is, as I mentioned in my presentation, there's a fair level, if you look at a high level, there's a fair level of kind of, I would say,
either where Sudarshan was present at a low level, that's where you know, we've added on inorganic business, corrosion protection, pigment dispersion, and tiles. In terms of the organic pigments, there you know, there are few complementary products, and of course there are few products which are overlapping, but I think we have a good strategy to ensure that we don't cannibalize or lose any of this business. Regarding the contingent liability, Nathuji, you want?
Regarding the contingent liability, as far as the solvent companies are concerned, we have evaluated those contingent liabilities, and we have suitably, you know, factored those in as a part of our purchase price allocations, and which has been given in our notes.
So we don't, that, you know, in the foreseeable future, we're not likely to see any of them materialize.
So, sir, what we are saying is that based on our assessment, where we see the probability, we have considered those provisions as a part of our fair valuation exercise. We don't expect that to get materialized unless there are any other post measure or unless there are any facts which get altered or changed in near future. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Bharat. Kindly join us, panelists. Unmute your audio. Introduce your company name and proceed with your question. Go ahead, Bharat.
Hello, am I audible?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Rajesh. Successful integration. I'm Bharat Kate from Quest. So, Rajesh, I have one question. You said, particularly on inventory, you said some of the inventory which has come from the acquired entity. So, when do we expect that inventory to run down at normalized level? In what time frame? That is first question. Second, we have projected an EBITDA of 35 million for FY26 for this FI. So this, is it after a one-time integration cost of €10 million or is it before? And last question, any thought process, we have a lot of on hand, any thought process on RICO divestment? Hello?
Yeah. So your first question, as I mentioned, is the first question, as I mentioned in my presentation, we are building inventories as our planning processes are broken. So we will be inefficient for some time and we will work on a high working capital, right? That's the first question. The second question on the EBITDA is that the 35 million is, of course, after the integration costs. Third thing is, as we explained in RICO, we are investing to build that business. And Nathuji already explained some of the steps we've taken on fixed cost reduction, building the order book, getting the right people. And we are very confident that RICO will turn around and it will become a good part of our business.
Okay. So my question is, when do we expect inventory to normalize? Over time frame? 3 quarter, 4 quarter, or?
At least for this financial year, I would say it will take time for us to build the supply chain process.
Oh, thank you and all the best.
Thank you. A request to all the participants, kindly restrict to one question per participant and rejoin the queue for a follow-up question. Next question is from the line of Rohit. Kindly join us, panelists, and meet your audio. Introduce your company name and proceed with your question.
Hi. This is Rohit Nagraj from B&K Securities. So just two questions. One is on the business perspective. So on Howback, in terms of the user industry, where is the largest concentration in terms of auto segment, polymers, or decorative coatings, etc.? If you can just give a little bit on that. And second question, when we are talking about $35 million EBITDA for the acquired group in 2026 and later about $90 to $100 million in 2028-29, what is the kind of EBITDA margin expansion that we are looking at from current March level of 4%? And on a longer term basis of your indicated EBITDA margins of 8 to 11%, when are we targeting that from a strategy perspective? Thank you.
That's fine. I think the concentration of business, as you rightly said, is the coatings or the paints market. Well, it's decorative paints, auto paints, is a good strength for the legacy Clariant business. In addition to this, some of the personal care businesses, some of the stationery businesses, and seed food and agro business is also important. The third level, third area is digital links. A good strength in digital links. So these are the three areas which we look at. Regarding the EBITDA margin, for the acquired group, when we are saying we'll reach 90 to 100, I think that reflects already an EBITDA margin of 9 to 10%.
Sure. Thanks a lot, and all the best.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we will take that as the last question. And now hand the conference over to the management for closing comments.
Thank you, Mr. Ankur, and Axis Capital. Thank you, participants, for your time and interest in Sudarshan Chemical. We are very confident that this acquisition marks a strategic move for our company towards leading global pigment industry. We are confident in our ability to integrate the business effectively. We remain confident in long-term prospects of this business, and we look forward to engaging with you again in future. Thank you.
Thank you very much. On behalf of Axis Capital Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect. Thank you.